in the wilderness again. Like every year, this first Sunday of the season of Lent finds us in the wilderness with Jesus facing temptations. Every year, the same story with a few slight twists. Why? For that matter, why do we engage in this time of fasting and prayer, of service and worship, of discipline and repentance, and this time called Lent? Is it just to engage in practices so that we can lessen our guilt? I hope not. Or to take out those parts of our lives that we really don't like, if but for a month and a half? Not really. Do we do this to become healthier, more likable people? Not even. And yet every year we circle back here again. Why? Well, sometimes those on the outside can actually help us see ourselves more clearly. I recently read an article by the French philosopher du jour, Alain de Botton. He was writing about the news media, about the ways in which the media attempt to offer us information and ultimately how ineffective they can be. And for a model of efficacy, he turned to a very surprising institution, the church. I'll admit, at first, I was a bit bewildered, because after all, de Botton is not a practitioner of religion. What he says, however, gives remarkable insight into our time of Lent, to these stories that we encounter, and into the very ways in which we gather this morning. So after explaining that we have this process for engaging a piece at a time, over great lengths of time, in fact, over a lifetime even, he writes this. Repetition and rehearsal are key to these pedagogical methods of the major faiths. They know that there is no point in informing of a vital cause in doing so in a hurried or excitable manner. They sit you down in a solemn place, quiet your mind, and then speak with a dignified urgency rather than panic, understanding that we will have to return to these ideas over days and weeks if we are to stand any chance of being influenced in how we think and behave. And so it is that we return once again to this wilderness, this first Sunday of Lent. What de Botton reminds us is that even if we have heard this story once or twice before, or even dozens of times for that matter, each time we approach it, even though we proverbially come back around to it, we are not in the same place. In that way, rather than being circular, our experience is more of a spiral, each pass deepening and changing our encounter with the story. Each time we return, we have the possibility, should we give ourselves to it, of entering anew these practices and stories of transformation and wonder. And this morning, deep in myth and mystery, is no different. What caught my attention this past week takes place before Jesus ever meets this tempter. Because in the first two verses, the writer of this gospel gives us two clues as to what will be happening. And they involve space and time. First, space. We are told that Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness. Now, setting aside this being led for a moment, this first Sunday of Lent, we need to understand what wilderness means. It has little to do with the majestic peaks of an REI catalog, because in the conceptual world of our sacred text, the wilderness was known to be a place of struggle. Whether of Jacob or Elijah or of Moses and the people of Israel, the wilderness is a place of challenge. You do not leave the wilderness the same person as you entered. Now, I know that sometimes we do choose to enter wilderness because sometimes we know that a part of us needs to be unearthed, examined, brought to the light. But I know that this isn't always the case, right? For some of us, we've spent so long in the wilderness that it can be difficult to remember what life is like outside of the struggle. And I know from the lives of this parish family and from my own life that sometimes we are thrown into the wilderness without choice or intention. I suppose that's why when I really contemplate entering into Lent, I feel an accompanying sense of trepidation. Now, I've been a pilgrim and a guide on this journey several times. And still I wonder, what if I am giving myself to this, and what if at the end I am still found wanting? What then? Now, this is probably why I'm troubled by Matthew's version of this story that has Jesus being led by the Spirit into the wilderness. Right? Being led seems to involve an intention on the part of God that gives me pause. Does God wish for struggle in our lives? Allows for, yes. But wish? What is it that comes from this experience that is for the good? More on that in a moment. Because our second clue about the nature of this season comes in the second verse of our passage, and it has to do with time. Jesus fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, good listeners, what is this supposed to elicit from us? 40 days and 40 nights. A flood. Noah and family. Other 40 days and 40 nights. Exodus, that was even longer. Those were 40 years. But let's go with Moses. Moses on the mountain, right, on Mount Nebo. He goes up and spends 40 days and 40 nights writing the Ten Commandments. Or Elijah, right, fleeing persecution, goes to Mount Horeb for 40 days and 40 nights. Archetypical stories, also all of them of struggle. And even though there's a number associated with them, 40, they also serve biblically as times of indeterminate length. Because biblically speaking, 40 days and 40 nights is a long time. Right? It's the amount of time that keeps stretching on even after you feel like you're done with it. It's that time of a fast when food doesn't just smell good, there is a visceral yearning, and there are still hours to go. 40 days and 40 nights, not coincidentally the length of the season of Lent, is meant to convey a sense of time outside of time. For it takes as long as it needs, and sometimes that can feel quite long indeed. So now, with this sense of space and time, I think we can better enter the story. And in doing so, we come up against one of the more enigmatic encounters in our Holy Writ. Jesus with the tempter. Though this passage is commonly known as the three temptations of Christ, it could just as well be known as the three tests of Christ. Because that's really where the Greek word points us, to these being tests. And not tests like contests or not even tests to see if someone will fail. Instead, these are tests like a metallurgist might perform to see what something is made of. to see what the essence of a material is, to discover what lies within. Who will Jesus be? This is what we enter into in this time of Lent, when we take on or when we give up. We do so to be tested, to discern where our desires are coming from and where our desires are pointing to. For Jesus, these tests came in the form of sustenance, security, and strength over others. You may resonate with these, or maybe not, but for him it was sustenance. Would he use his power for himself rather than trusting in God to provide for his need? Security. Would he use his closeness to God to ensure that he was safe and secure? Strength over others. Now, it's interesting because for the tempter, Jesus' power does not seem to be in dispute. The question is, will he use his power over and against others, or with them, alongside them, among them? Now, each encounter, each of the temptations don't seem to be obviously evil. I mean, after all, if a temptation didn't seem good in some way, it wouldn't be tempting. But each time, the temptation, it doesn't like take away the will. It attempts subtly and over time to change the will. Now, some have posited that when confronted, of course Jesus was going to resist, right? Of course he was going to overcome these temptations, right? Because of his divine nature, there would be no real struggle. But it seems to me these questions were just as critical for Jesus when he engaged them, entering his public ministry, as they are for us. Who would he be? Who will we be? And if these weren't real questions, struggles for Jesus, then I have no interest in following Jesus. If these weren't real temptations, if these weren't real tests. I mean, how would that meet the reality of our daily struggle in the wilderness? For I know that I am tested daily to create my own sustenance, to hide through my own security, to hold power over others because of my fear. In the end, or at the root, to wonder about my enoughness. Do I have? Am I now? Will I be enough? And so here we are, at the start of another entrance into the wilderness, perhaps anxious about where it might take us or what it may demand of us. But friends, just as it is necessary for us to take this journey, it is essential for us to remember why we do this at all, so that we can come close to a great mystery, this mystery of Easter. Episcopal priest Marietta Anschutz offers this. She says, "Lenten penitence engages the dark places in our lives that we may come face to face with them, name them, understand them, and seek forgiveness for them. It is not about guilt," she writes. "It is about freedom from the control that our fears and insecurities have over us all, about the amendment of life and about new beginnings." This engaging the dark places, as frightening as it is, must be done for true healing to take place. As Archbishop Desmond Tutu reminds us, superficial truth-telling can only offer superficial healing. And so this path in the wilderness may well mean that we will be encountering places in ourselves that we often would rather not visit. But we must remember, friends, that we do not travel this wilderness on our own. It is why this season has been set aside for us all, why in the weeks to come we will be hearing stories of rebirth, of renewed sight, of newfound life, gathered as one body. Friends, let us enter this wilderness together. We will use the guides that have led pilgrims on this way for millennia. Daily time for depth of prayer with stories of our faith and with silence. Gathering for weekly worship with our fellow pilgrims. And regular acts of service and mercy with those who have need. And in all, by living in trust. In the words of our Eucharistic prayer from South Africa, not trusting in our own strength or that we can earn our own salvation, but trusting that as we make our way to the great vigil and to Easter Day 6 weeks from now, we will trust that there are new beginnings ahead of us, that there is forgiveness to be found within us, and that for all of us, wholeness awaits.